Tracing the money that funds al-Qaeda is turning out to be tougher than people expected. The Washington Post reports today that the effort has been hampered by bureaucratic infighting on the U.S. side and by clever asset management on the part of al-Qaeda. Post reporter Douglas Farah writes about this in today's newspaper. And Doug Farah, first on the subject of al-Qaeda's finances, how do they manage to move money in such a way that it's hard to get at?
Well, they basically made a decision, I believe, after the 98 U.S. embassy bombings, after the U.S. froze about $240 million of Taliban funds, which were essentially al-Qaeda funds. They just simply decided to limit their exposure in the formal financial sector as much as they could, and then they moved into commodities such as diamonds, gold, sapphires, honey, gum arabic, any number of things where they could buy things that would hold their value, were relatively easy to move, and couldn't be traced, and also could not be frozen in the face of future attacks.
When you say relatively easy to move, does that mean that diamonds or honey or other commodities are going across borders, or ownership is going across borders?
Well, clearly diamonds go across borders. Gold goes across borders, but gold is also easy to transfer through different banking systems and the hawala system, where they can just transfer value from one point to another across the globe without keeping any records. Obviously, things like sapphires and emeralds, which they also use fairly extensively, are very easy to transport, and they hold their value. You can release small amounts of them at a time into the market without attracting any attention. So those are the most valuable and interesting to them.
You mentioned the hawala system. This is this money, informal money transfer system that operates throughout much of the Middle East and East Africa and elsewhere. There was a huge crackdown on it earlier. Has it actually put a crimp on al-Qaeda at all?
Well, it's hard to say because the hawala system is basically untraceable and unknowable in its current form. So I don't think we have any idea how much of a dent has been made on the al-Qaeda financial structure. Basically, if you were to close down the hawala system seriously, you would probably bring the economies of India, Pakistan, and several other countries to a grinding halt. So no one is particularly interested in slamming the hawala system shut. The idea, I think, is to make it somewhat more accountable, because the way it's run now, you can transfer any amount of money from one point in the globe to another point in the globe without money ever actually moving through the system and with no records being kept, which of course is ideal if you want to hide your financial transactions.
Well, so much for the liquidity of al-Qaeda. On to how U.S. authorities have been trying to deal with this investigation. On the subject of bureaucratic infighting, you write, some of the worst conflicts have been between Treasury and Justice. How so?
Well, there's been a difficult time. I think more than turf fights, maybe it would be more accurate to say that there have been a hard time defining duties. There have been duplication of duties. Some agencies think they do one thing particularly well and don't want another agency to step in on it. Some people like to run their investigations a certain way and don't want other people running those type of investigations. It's been, I think, a difficult shakedown period where I think initially after September 11th, my understanding is that there was a lot of goodwill, cooperation happening fairly quickly, and then over time, as resources got into competition and people were fighting over pieces of the pie, that people reverted more or less to some of their old-style bureaucratic turf protection. And I think that it's clearly gotten better, as we also write, over time. The president himself has stepped in and dealt with the principals on several occasions of all the agencies involved, and I think that the situation is clearly better now than it was before, but it probably still has a ways to go.
One other point. Very briefly, you mentioned that there's been some reevaluation in these agencies of the wealth of Osama bin Laden.
Yes, the common wisdom initially was that he inherited something like $300 million, and now people are in reviewing what he was able to spend when he was in the Sudan, and other intelligence records now believe it was much smaller than that, probably more in the neighborhood of $30 million, and that he spent a good deal of that when he was setting up in the Sudan and sort of setting up al-Qaeda, and probably does not have a vast amount of personal wealth to give now, and hence we see all this other fundraising activity through charities, through commodities, and that sort of thing.
Doug Farah, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Reporter Douglas Farah of The Washington Post.